So we're going to start here at the bottom of Pei Dalet Amud Bet. We're discussing here Tovat Hanah. Tovat Hanah is the ability to give something when you don't own it. Even though you don't own it, you might have the right to give it away. When you have that right to give it away, is that just goodwill that you have, or is there actually monetary value to the fact that you have the ability to distribute or give away something that does have monetary value, even though it's not yours? So the classic example here is what we're dealing with, Trumos and Maestros. Trumos and Maestros belong to the Kohen or to the Levi, and yet, nevertheless, you have the ability to distribute it to whichever Kohen or whichever Levi that you want. That ability to distribute it to whomever you want, does that have monetary value? And obviously, the nafkaminas are, if you have monetary value, if you steal it, or if someone steals it, or if you destroy it, that you would have to actually owe money for that. Whereas, if you believe that that ability to give it simply goodwill, then that goodwill doesn't have monetary value, and therefore, if you stole it, you wouldn't have to repay it, because you only can repay what you steal when there's monetary value to it. So the Gemara says, our Mishnah, actually, which is internally logical, which makes a lot of sense, but when you look at it from the aspect of Tovat Hanah, it looks like there's a stira, right, an inconsistency in the Mishnah. The Mishnah, in the first place, said that one restricts all Kohanim from getting benefit from them, that they can't go ahead and remove the ability of the Kohanim to come get their Truma or Maestros, because Truma and Maestros belong to the Shevet of Kohanim. If you restrict all Kohanim from getting the Truma, I mean, you say no Kohen can get Hanah from you, you don't have such a right to lock out the Kohanim. And therefore, any Kohen can come and take this Truma, because they're entitled to the Truma, and you don't have that right to block them from getting the Truma. Whereas the second half of the Mishnah says, if you restrict certain Kohanim or certain Levim from getting Hanah from you, that is permitted, because you can then still give your Truma or Maiser to another Kohen or another Levi. And therefore, your nether is Chal, it does stand, and you can distribute your Truma and your Maestros to other Kohanim and other Levim. Based on those two sections of the Mishnah, which seems to make sense at base value, we actually come up with opposite conclusions with regards to Tovat Hanah. In the first case in the Mishnah, where we say that if you restrict all Kohanim to you, you're not able to do such a thing, or you're unable to restrict all Kohanim. In that instance, then you are Kohanim or Levim can come and take the Truma or Maestro for themselves. That means that the Tovat Hanah, your ability to give it away, actually has no monetary value. Because the fact that other Kohanim, the Kohanim can come here, or the Levim can come here and take, against your will, the Truma Maestros, means that they are technically getting benefit from you. So it must be that the Tovat Hanah, Eino Mamon, does not have monetary value. And that's why the Kohanim and Levim can show up here and take the Truma Maestros for themselves. Whereas in the second part of the Mishnah, where you restrict certain Kohanim or certain Levim from taking or getting Hanah from you, then we say that they are restricted, and you can go give it to another Kohen or to another Levi. So in that instance, it sounds like Tovat Hanah Yesh Mamon, that Tovat Hanah does have monetary value, because that's why these specific Kohanim and Levim cannot take the Truma and Maaser from you, because that would be giving them benefit, and that benefit would only be if Tovat Hanah has Mamon. So now, how do we explain this theory? How do we explain this inconsistency in the Mishnah? So the first attempt we have at that is Amar Rav Hoshea. This is 2, 4, 5 lines down from the bottom on Daf, Pei Dalet Amud Bet. Amar Rav Hoshea, Lokasha, Ha Rabbi, Vaha Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. This is actually a machlokes between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, we have a Braisa, Gonev, Tivlo, Shel Chaveiro, Vaachlo. When a person steals Tevel from his friend and then eats it, Meshalim Lo, Demei Tivlo. Then he only has to repay the entire Tevel that he stole. That's what Rabbi says. Divrei Rabbi. Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda Omer, Eino Meshalem Ela Demei Chulin. He only has to pay back the portion of the Tevel that is Chulin. So if we look at Chulin, I'm sorry, if we look at Tevel, Tevel is really a pile of Chulin, which would be permissible for the owner to eat. Truma, Meister, it's all mixed together. You have all these different components that are mixed together. So here comes the Ganav, right? He comes a thief and he steals the Tevel from you. How much do you have to pay back? How much loss did you really cause to the owner when you stole this? The Trumos don't belong to him. The Maestros don't belong to him. They belong to the Kohanim and Levim. So is that really a loss? So Rabbi says you have to pay back the Demei Tevel, the amount of the Tevel, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says you pay back the Chulin. So my love, the Hakim Yitzlegeis. The Gemara says this must be what they're arguing about, Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Yehuda. The Rabbi Savar Tovat Hanah Mamon. Rabbi believes the ability to give away Trumos and Maestros the Kohen has monetary value. And therefore, we're going to demand of you, when you pay back, after you've stolen Tevel, we're going to make you pay back the Demei Chulin, which is all the value that belongs to Baal, plus I don't think you have to pay back the trumas and maisim themselves. You have to pay back the value of what the value of giving away those trumas and maisim. Whatever that small token value is that we assign to the individual to be able to give away their trumos and maestros, then you'll have to pay that in addition to the Dvei Chulin Shibo. But Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, Tavas Anah ain't a mamon. Tavas Anah does not have monetary value, and therefore, you only have to pay back the Dvei Chulin, you only have to pay back the portion that was shayach, that was relevant to the Baal. So based on this, the way Rabbi Yossi has explained the machlokas in the Braisa between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, is that they say that they are the authors of our Mishnah. Rabbi is going to be the author of our Mishnah for the second case, where it says Tovas Anah is Mamon. And Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda is going to be the author of our first case in the Mishnah, where it says Tovas Anah ain't a Mamon. So you're right, there is a stira in a Mishnah, but that's because there are two different authors to the pieces of our Mishnah. And we get their opinion from this Braisa by explaining this Braisa. So the Gemara says, well, the Kuli Alma, Tovas Anah ain't a Mamon. Everybody agrees that Tovas Anah does not have a monetary value. Ela Hacha, B'matzno, Chilohumu, Kamif Ligay. They're arguing about, when we talk about matanos, or portions of gifts that are being given to Kohanim or Levim that will eventually be separated, what's their status when they're not separated? So when you look at a pile of tevel, there are two different ways to look at it. One way to look at the pile of tevel is that they now have a mix of truma, meiser, and chulin. Everything you look at, every piece that you look at, is a mix of these items. Until you separate out the truma, until you separate out the meiser, every little component of this pile that you look at has truma, meiser, and chulin mixed into it, so you can't differentiate between them. Or the other possibility of looking at a pile of tevel is that you actually have discrete components. We can't tell where those components are yet, but they're actually discrete components. There's chulin in here, there's truma in here, and there's meiser in here. Each one is a discrete component within the pile, but we just don't know where it's going to be until you later on separate out their trumos and maestros, which assigns it to a certain section. So that's actually the machlokas between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi and Yehuda. When you don't have matanos, when you have a pile of tevel or other matanos, matnos kahuna, when you don't separate them out, but you are eventually going to separate them out, what is their status when they're still part of the mixture? So when we have trumos and maestros, which eventually will be separated from this mixture of tevel, how do we look at them when they're mixed in the tevel? So Rabbi says, when they're mixed in the tevel, we look at them as being a total mixture. There's no discrete components here. Until you take off the troops and maestros, we have a total mixture of tevel. That total mixture of tevel, when you steal it, the ganav has to bring back and pay back the entire tevel, because he can't say that he just stole chulin. He stole tevel, because he can't identify what the chulin is. Because Rabbi Yossi says that matanot shalohurmu, ki'iluhurmu dami, they're as if they've been separated already, meaning that when in tevel, you have discrete components. You have chulin, you have meiser, and truma. We don't know where they are right now, but they still are separate components. And since they're separate components, when the ganav steals them, he can say to you, listen, I didn't really make you lose any money when it comes to truma and meiser. So I only caused you a loss when it comes to the mechulin, the chulin aspect of it. So based on that, we'll explain the machlokes between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi is going to say when the ganav steals the tevel, he has to pay back the entire amount of the tevel because we can't identify what the chulin is. Everything belongs to the Baal now, and therefore you have to give back a full amount of Dmei Tevel. Whereas Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, no. Since you eventually will remove Trumas and Maestros, even when it's in the Tevel form, when it's still mixed together, it's as if there's a discrete component of Truma, discrete component of Maestro, and discrete component of Chulin. So therefore when the Gam steals it, he says, look, I really only own you the Chulin. That's all that the real loss for you here is only the Chulin, and that's what I have to pay you back, only Dmei Chulin. And with regards to Tovas Anah, paying anybody for the Trumas and Maestros, the ability to give away the Trumas and Maestros, we're saying that the Chuliyama, everybody believes that Tovas Anah ain't a Mamon. So Mar says, even Tovas Anah ain't a Mamon, if you say that giving away the Trumas and Maestros has no monetary value, Mali Hurmu, Mali Lo Hurmu, why does it make a difference whether they're separated out or not separated out? Meaning these are two independent issues. Whether Tovas Anah is Mamon or not Mamon has nothing to do with whether we view the mixture as having discrete components and being a total mixture. And those are two independent decisions. Why should it be whether you think the separation or not separation have any impact on whether you think giving away trumas and maestros has any monetary value? Why did you come to this conclusion? So Gemara says, Ela hainu taimo. This is the reasoning of our Braisa. Now again, just here, the Gemara is on a sidetrack now. The Gemara is not explaining our mission anymore. It's left that. It's trying to explain the machlokas between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda. After it gets to a conclusion with regards to that, it'll come back and try to explain our Mishnah. So at this point in time, as the Ram points out here, the Gemara is indifferent whether it's Tovas Tanah is Mamon or Tovas Tanah is Eino Mamon. It's inconclusive with regard to the Gemara. So when I explain, based on this, what's the opinion of Rabbi Yosef Yehuda if you hold each one of those sides. So if you hold that Tovas Tanah is Eino Mamon, that explains why Rabbi Yehuda believes that you only have to pay back the Tamei Chulin, because there's no value in the Truma and the Meitzer. El Hainu time at the Rabbi. So what does Rabbi believe when you say Tovas Tanah Eino Mamon? Kansura banan the ganav, kehechad alignov. It's a knas, it's a penalty to the ganav, so he will be dissuaded from stealing. Why? Because if he steals regular chulin, he has to pay back 100% of what he stole. Whereas if he steals tevel, he's only going to have to pay back 85% or so of that which he stole. If that's the case, he's going to benefit from stealing tevel versus stealing chulin. So he might have an incentive to actually steal tevel versus stealing chulin. So to discourage the ganav, or to make it as difficult when he steals tevel as when he steals chulin, we say pay back 100%, not just the chulin aspect of it. On the other hand, if you say that Tovas Tanah is mamon, so if Tovas Tanah is mamon, then we've explained why Rabbi holds what he does, that he has to pay back the entire Dmei Tiblo and not just the Dmei Chulin. So what does he hold? If Tovas Tanah is mamon, why does he only have to pay back the Dmei Chulin? Sever Kansur, about on the Balabait, that the Knas is actually on the Balabait, Ki Heite to Lodli Shau Lutible. We want to stop the Balabait from leaving around Tevel. Tevel is problematic, but when you leave around Tevel, right, people can come to be Nechshoban. We could end up eating Tevel, could get mixed up in other items. We don't want you leaving around Tevel to cause issues for people. There's a Mitzvah Dei Shamayim for Tevel, people who eat Tevel, and therefore we don't want you leaving around. In order to prevent you from leaving around, we're going to say if someone steals your Dmei Tevel, even though he really should pay you back 100%, he's only going to pay you back the Dmei Chulin, and you're going to lose out the Tovas Tanah of giving away the Truma and the Meiser, because we want you to be Mafrish, your Truma and Meiser, immediately. We don't want you to leave them. Right, there is such a chazaka. The Gemara Beis talks about such a chazaka with regards to a chaver. That a chaver is a chazaka, ain't a chaver. Mishah Tivlo. He doesn't leave around his tevel. And we assume that if there's fruits or vegetables around the house of a chaver, that he's taken off the Trumas Maestros right away. Because he doesn't want to leave around tevel that could cause problems for anybody. Now, the Gemara goes back to explaining our Mishnah. So since now we are inconclusive when it comes to whether Tovas Tanah is mamon or Tovas Tanah ain't a mamon, because my machlokes Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda can be explained either way, and therefore we can't come to a conclusion from their machlokes in the Baraita. Now we have to explain the stira in our Mishnah, right? The problem in our Mishnah, where the Reish and the Seifa seem to conclude differently with regards to Tovas Tanah. So remember, Vavamar shiny Truma. Truma is different. Tehainu time is the Yitzlua Korcho. This is the reason the Kohanim can come and take the Truma against his will. Mishum the Truma lochazi ala the Kohanim. Because Truma is only ro'oi for Kohanim to eat. There's no value for the Baal to keep around Truma. And if he keeps it around, it's only causing problems, not to any benefit for him. They came in the Ka'at to the Mishraelayu, Shavya Afra Ba'alma. Since, if we leave Truma around, it's going to cause a Takala, meaning that now you restricted all Kohanim from getting any benefit from you. So what are you going to do with your Truma? You're going to have to keep your Truma by you. What's the value of keeping Truma by you? You can't eat it. The only person who could eat it was a Kohen. So now you're going to keep it by you, and that's only going to be, only has the opportunity to cause problems. It only has the possibility of causing problems because it's restricted in your eating. It can get mixed up with your other fruits. It could be eaten by someone in your family. It can only cause problems. So therefore, it sounds almost like a hefker based in hefker, although none of the Rishonim really explicitly say this. But based in took away, since it's Azer Banah to all the Kohanim, plus you can't get any benefit from it, they made it the equivalent of Afro, since it's, there's no benefit like any other Isurei Hanah. It's Kafra Baum, as if it's worthless. And since it's worthless, when the Kohanim comes to take it, therefore, they're not getting any benefit from you, because it's already worthless. If it's worthless, they can come and take it without your permission, because they're not getting benefit from you. So that's how we explain our Mishnah. The first case in the Mishnah, we ask for all Kohanim, even though Tovas Tanah is Mamon, even though Tovas Tanah, that ability to give it away, has monetary value. Nevertheless, the Kohanim can come and take it against your will. Why can they take it against your will? Because here, the Truma is worthless. It's worthless because you can't give it to any Kohen, and you can't get any benefit from it. It has no benefit to you. In that case, it's worthless, it's ka'afra ba'almas, as if it has no value. When it has no value, the other client can come and take it. Whereas in the second case, where you restrict specific client or specific Levium from getting the Truma or Meiser from you, then you can gift it to other client and Levium. If that's the case, then the Truma has value. The Truma has value, then you get the Tovas Tanah. You get the benefit of giving it away to whomever you want. That benefit has monetary value. And therefore, the Kohanim and Levim, who you restricted, can't come and take the Truma Meister, because then they would actually be getting Hanah from you, that monetary value of your ability to gift it to them. So at the end of the Gemara, that's where we explain the Mishnah. The Ran happens over here to have a nice piece here, epilogue or a corollary to our sugi over here. It's a very interesting machlokas between him and the Rashba. If you look down in the Ran is two lines, not into the widest lines of the Ran, but the wider lines of the Ran, two lines down, it says, Omehashma Inan. From our Gemara you hear, Sha'oser hanat perot alatzmo. If someone restricts fruits on himself, all the fruits and fruits on himself, people can come and take them against his will. Because if he restricted himself enough from these fruits are worthless to him. If they're worthless to him, they're equivalent of hefker. If they are hefker, then they could come, others can come and take them. Then you can't stop them. Isn't there a way out of this? He could go get hataras nedarim. If he gets hataras nedarim, he came to hashtami aloha itchio. But since at this point, he hasn't gotten hataras nedarim, right? Therefore, we say they can come along and take them. But if he does go get hataras nedarim, then retroactively these payros were not hefker. If they weren't hefker, you do not have to be. These people came and took them. Didn't have the right to take them. They didn't have the right to take them. They now have to pay you for the value of that which we took. The game of the chacham oker nidro meikaro, since the chacham undermines the nether from its onset. It's as if these payrolls were never restricted to you. If that's the case, then they were not really hefker. So if that's the case, how do we explain our sugi over here? How could the kohanim come and take this truma and maestros against his will? Because if he is mashal on the nether, if he does the taras nedarim, they're going to have to pay him for taking it. Why don't we worry about the fact that maybe he'll do a taras nedarim and they're getting benefit from him and they'll be violating the nether? The Ran says, this is the name of the Rashba actually over here, lab kushu. That's not a question. That's not. The Ran brings an example or proof from Hamakadish Isha. Someone who's Makadish Isha tonight on a condition, she'ena leha o alav nedarim, on the condition that there are no nedarim on her or on him. The nimtza leha o alav nedarim, and then they find that they do have nidarim. So that was a t'nai condition in the Kedushin. The Kedushin don't work because the t'nai was triggered. The t'nai says, only if I don't have nidarim. And now we find out that he does have nidarim. Or it says, only if you don't have nidarim to the woman. And the woman does have nidarim. Eino mikudeshit. And the Gemara concludes in Kedushin that she is now, and also in Ksubos, that Gemara concludes that eino mikudeshit, she's not mikudash. She's a free bird. I mean, she can go and marry someone else. Based on that, now she can go marry a third party. But even though the conclusion of the Gemara there is if she goes and gets hataras nedarim, or he goes and gets hataras nedarim, mikudeshet, she's mikudash. Meaning that retroactively the kedushin will be affected because the tanai was not triggered because there were no darim. If you're okay nedarim yikara, it's as if there were no nedarim at that time. The Rashi brings a proof from that Gemara that we don't worry about Hataras Nedarim, because here we let the woman go marry a third party. Even though if she does Hataras Nedarim, or someone else does, or the husband that would have been, does Hataras Nedarim, she's married, and then you have a problem. Her children are mazerim for the next marriage, she's married, she's an ish. How come we're not choshesh for Hataras Nedarim? So Rashi proves from there that we don't worry about Hataras Nedarim. We don't worry about it. We assume that the status quo will remain, and the person will not be Mater Nedar. Oh, if they are matir neder, then it does have implications. Even though we know she can do a taras nedarim, the kedushin lemafreya, and the kedushin retroactively, as long as you haven't done a taras nedarim, we don't worry that you may dimo mitchel. Maybe you will come and do a taras nedarim. So too over here in our Gemara, if he does a taras nedarim, then the kohanim would have done an isur lemafreya because they would have taken something that is a surbano. Because this truma belongs to him, he has the rights to give it away. And only because he had the nether in effect were they able to come and take it because it was his equivalent of hefker. But if he removed the nether, it wasn't hefker. And therefore they would have violated this nether. Nevertheless, as long as he hasn't done hataras nedarim, lo chashin en lechachi. That's the Rashba's value, because we don't worry about it. The Rashba believes that we never worry about hataras nedarim. If hataras nedarim is put into effect, it has implications, meaning that you'll have to reap the quantum here will be over an Isur, to getting an offer man. In the case by payrolls, if you took the payrolls from this individual after the payrolls to him, you're going to have to repay him because you took that which was his property. In the case of Kedushim, she will be married retroactively. So it does have implications if you do a Darsan Darm, but we don't consider that possibility until it happens. Until it happens, we don't worry about Hatar syndrome. That's what the Rashba says. The Ran over here disagrees. And the Ran says, V'ani mistapek. Says, I'm very suspicious of this conclusion. But the moment that a person asserts something on them, they are mafkir this object. And anybody who takes possession of it, they're taking possession from hefkir. Even though the isur is removed retroactively when he goes and does the tarsim darim, kinyan mamonah shozeinu batel. You can't remove the kinyan retroactively, meaning that once it was hefkir, and this other party came along and took it from you and made a full-fledged kinyan on it, it goes into their possession. Once it's in their possession, you don't have the ability to reverse that retroactively. When you go to reverse things retroactively, you can reverse things that are in your possession or things that belong to you. That you can change their status. But once someone else has taken possession over them, you no longer have the right to undermine their new possession. They took it from Hefker when they did take it. Once they're in possession, you can't go back and say, well, it wasn't Hefker at the time, because when they did take it, it was Hefker, and that's a full-fledged kinyan. Jani Mota She'ela Behefker. They can take it against the will. And our Gemara over here, Dilo, Vade, Himen to Durm, the Shulei Elayu Kayamin. Right? Then, so the Ran says, we are Choshesh. We are always Choshesh for Hataras Nedarim. Ah, so why in our case, over here by the Kohanim, can they go ahead and take it? That's what the Ran says. Once it's Hefker, and they come and take it, it becomes theirs, and you can never undermine their possession of this object. So it's over here, in our case, where he takes the Neder Hanoah from the Kohanim, and then he has Truma to give away, the Kohanim can come take it against his will, because at that moment it's Afra Ba'alman, it's Hefker. The Kohanim can come and take it. Ah, later on he goes and does Hataras Nedarim. Well, that undermines the fact that there was an Isur or Hefker at that time, but it can't change the fact that there was a full-fledged Kinyan and the Kohanim now own it. So the same thing by the Peros. The person who takes those pears when they're Hefker, they're his forever. You can't come and undermine it by doing Hataras Nedarim. The Ran says, we are Choshesh for Hataras Nedarim. We are always Choshesh in Hataras Nedarim. Just in these cases, it won't make a difference. Even if he does Hataras Nedarim, it's not going to make a difference because we won't reverse the Kinyan in hand. Ah, how is the Ran going to explain the case in Kiddushin? First of all, the Ran says, how do I know to you that we're Choshesh by Taras Nedarim? Because we know that an Isra that comes through a nether is called Dabar Sheyesh Lo Matirin. We just saw that about Tarobas earlier in the Masechta, right? Shum Dachim Mikri Dabar Sheyesh Lo Matirin Bevek Anozer Min HaYerek. There we call something that is a Chepet, that's also because of a nether, Dabar Sheyesh Lo Matirin. Why? Because it can be Matir Nether. So the fact that it's called Dabar Sheyesh Lo Matirin in a Tarobas, when it's mixed with other things, it's not Batel because of that. And why is it called a Dabar Sheyesh Lo Matirin? Because you have the possibility of being Matir the nether. We see we are Choshesh for Hataras Nedarim. Ah, what about that which took place in Kiddushin? Chitznan ain't a Mekudeshet by Kiddushin, when it says she's not Mekudash. Lo shetei miteret li nasei. Not that she's mutter to go marry others. Elo din oktani. It's telling you the din. Right now, she's not married to this individual. Not that that permits her to go and marry another party, but right now, she's permitted, she's not married to this individual. Well, filo tei menami mil to the psik toktani. And even if you want to suggest that the Gemara is saying something definitive, she's not married, that means she can go out and marry. By her, we don't have to worry that she's going to go be matir neder afterwards. Because now she married another party, and she knows if she's matir the neder, she'll cause her second marriage to dissolve, she'll cause her children from the second marriage to be mamzerim, and she won't go ahead and be matir neder. We can depend on her not to do that. She's not going to go and mess herself up, and therefore we don't worry about hataras nedarim because it's in her hand. What about him? That case in Kiddushin also has that where the husband, or the husband-to-be, says that I'm only Mekadesh to you if I don't have any Nedarim on me, and then they find out that he has Nedarim. Right, so they're not married. She goes and marries a third party, but now the husband can go ahead, this one who made the Kiddushin, the first Kiddushin, go ahead and go be Mashal on his Nedar, get a Taras Nedarim. He does that. They were really married, and he's wrecking this woman's second marriage. He has no disincentive from doing that, so why doesn't he go ahead? Why don't we worry about that? The Gemara says, when the Gemara says Einu Mekudeshet, that's only with regards to the woman herself. But when it comes to the man, we never say Einu Mekudeshet. The Gemara doesn't have a conclusion by the man. And it'll be a full Kedushin. And maybe if he doesn't go, we were Choshesh, and we won't let her get married here in a case where she accepts his Kedushin of Tanah that he doesn't have any Nedarim on him. Then we find out that he does have Nedarim. It's a possibility that we won't let her get married because we're Choshesh. This guy might go and be Matir Neder. If he's Matir Neder, he will cause problems for her in her future marriages. So that we'll have to rectify it in some other way. But maybe it will be the case that she is not allowed to go marry. Here we have a machlokas between the Ran and the Rashba has very interesting implications. Their machlokas, their big point of their machlokas is whether we're choshesh for hataras nedarim. The Rashba says in general we're not choshesh for hataras nedarim. And the Ran says we are choshesh for hataras nedarim. The implication of that, whether we're choshesh for hataras nedarim or not, is an implication when someone takes a nether that causes their possessions to be hefker. Since their possessions are hefker and a third party comes and takes it, what's the status when they're matzah in the nether? According to the Rashba, says we are not choshesh for hataras nedarim. When you go ahead and do hataras nedarim, then you've caused a problem. By causing that problem, the person now will have to pay it back to you. He would have equivalent of stealing it. You've changed the status of the object retroactively, and therefore you have to rectify it now, those that took those items. Whereas the Rambam believes, since we are choshesh from the moment that you take the nether for hataras nedarim, the fact that we allow an argamar, for instance, for the Kohanim to take the truma means that we don't, even if he was matir nether, it would not reverse the situation. And that's the Rambam's conclusion, is that even if someone is kone from hefker, that kinyan takes it out of the ability of the other individual to reverse it. It's left his possession. Once it's left his possession in a full-fledged kinyan from hefker, he can't now go and reverse the status of hefker retroactively. At the moment the kinyan happened, it was a good kinyan, and that won't be affected by the retroactive change. The other nafkamina, again, is by kiddushin. Yet by Kiddushin, the Rashba believes if you go ahead and you're matzah neder later on, that's going to cause problem for this woman's Kiddushin, because when it says any Kiddushin in the Gemara there, it means any Kiddushin, she can go ahead and marry. Because we're not Koshesh, Lataris Nadarim. Whereas the Ran says, no, any Kiddushin means she's not married to this guy, but it doesn't mean she can go ahead and marry someone else, because we are Koshesh for Lataris Nadarim. Therefore, we're not going to let her go and marry someone else until we clear this issue up. Right, this is the end of the Gemara. Now we're going to start a new Mishnah. This next Gemara on Peyayim and Aleph with the Mishnah is actually a Gemara that's found in Ksubos. It's an identical Gemara that's found in Ksubos. The reason it's brought here in Ksubos, the Mishnah on Ayin Chedem Adbet in Ksubos actually quotes our Mishnah, because Shmuel makes a statement about our Mishnah here in the Dharm, and it makes a statement about the Mishnah in Ksubos. The two statements of Shmuel seem to be a stira, and that's what our Gemara is going to deal with today, the stira in the Memrot of Shmuel. So the Gemara here is brought because this is our Mishnah, and then they bring the Mishnah of Ksubos to show the other part of Shmuel, and in Ksubos the other way around. They have the Mishnah in Ksubos, and they bring our Mishnah to question the position of Shmuel over there, and throughout today's daf and all the way through Peivav is actually a Gemara that's identical to the Gemara that's found in Ksubos and Ayin Tet Amud Aleph. So the Mishnah says, Konim Sheni Osei Al Pi Avo, if she takes a nether where she won't do, that her father can't get any benefit from her Al Pi Avicho, or her father-in-law can't get any benefit from her Al Pi Achi, that her brother cannot get any benefit from her Al Pi Achicha, or her brother-in-law, right, her husband's brother, cannot get any benefit from her Inu Yochel HaHafer. The husband does not have a right in this case to be made for the nether. Why? It's not Inu Nefesh, and it's not Varim Shebeino Leveina. So because of that, he has no right to be made for it. But if she says, Inu Osei Al Pi Achicha, she says, I will not do for you, and it's Arafa after, then she doesn't need to do Hafara. Why? Because a woman is obligated to provide her Maisa Yadayim to her husband, to give Hana to her husband. Therefore, she doesn't have a right to come here and undermine the fact that her husband has liens or rights to her Hana or her output. So when she's Zeni Oseh Apicha, she doesn't have a right to override that. Therefore, Ein Tzarech La'afer. The husband doesn't even have to be made for. The nether is not Chal, because she doesn't have the ability to Oser something that doesn't belong to her. Rabbi Kiva Mer Yefer. He says you should be made for Shema Ta'adipa Lav Yoter Min Aroilo, that maybe she will give him more than she benefits. Meaning that the Gemara Ksuba says that a husband is entitled to his wife's output up to a certain amount. That amount, 5 shekelim or 10 shekelim, depending if you are 10 shekelim in Yehuda or in the Galil. That amount is connected to Mizonos. But if she produces an excess of that, that excess will belong to her. Since that excess will belong to her, he should be made for the nether for that excess. Because that excess, he can't prevent necessarily himself from getting hanoah from it. And if she somehow gives him a little more than he's entitled to him in a din, then he'll be violating the nether. So he should be made for the nether to take care of that hadafa, that extra stuff, that extra that she produces. Your term is whatever. Rabbi Yochanan Mary Yefer Shemi Garshinam Tiasru Alav. Rabbi Yochanan says no, you're not being made for the hadafa, but rather you have to be made fair because maybe in the future you will get divorced. And if you get divorced, then the nether will be chal in the future when you're divorced, because now you no longer have a lien over her produce or output. Since you have no lien on her output, then the nether will be chal at that point in time, because she has control over it. And if it's chal at that time, that will prevent you from being maxi grusha, so you will never be able to take this woman back, because it will create an untenable situation, an untenable marriage, where this woman can't provide hanoah to her husband in any way. And that would make it impossible to have such a marriage. Even though, we must say, it's not just simply she's not going to give her Maisa Yadayim, because we see that the Gemara in Ksubas is full of cases where she says, any I'll keep my own Maaseh Yadayim, and I won't get any mezonos from you. But it must be including the seven. The Gemara Ksubas enumerates seven melachot that a woman must do for her husband, even when she's doing her own Maaseh Yadayim and providing her own mezonos. In even those cases, there are seven items, like a Mesat HaMitah, bring him Kos Chamin, Roket, and to bathe him. All of these obligations are of a wife to a husband to generate a relationship between them and a connection of love between them. Those items, if she restricts herself in them, then after they get divorced, she'll be totally restricted, and she can't provide those for her husband when she remarries him, when she takes her back. And therefore, he should be made for today because of that possibility. And maybe in the future, they will get divorced, or that they, and then he'll want to be machzir grusha, so he'll want to remarry her, and that will become impossible if he's not made for the nether today. So now, just quickly, we'll just remind you, in the Gemara Ksubos, this Mishnah, right, it has to set up this Mishnah. Number one, what type of hadafah? When we're talking about hadafah, the extra over here, the machlokas is about what's called hadafah yedei dechak, that which when a woman pushes herself to do a little extra, when she pushes herself to do a little extra, who does that belong to? That we'll see is the machlokas in the Gemara coming up. Number two is that when we're talking about over here is a case where the woman is producing for herself. She's producing the Maaseh Yadayim, for her husband. And therefore, and she's getting, so either it has to be that she's getting mezonos from her husband, and it's in the husband's decision whether to suspend it or not. And since she's getting mezonos from her husband, therefore she must give her Maaseh Yadayim to the husband. Or there are the cases where she didn't say that I'm going to take my own Maaseh Yadayim. It's not a case where she made the decision, even though, according to Rav Huna and the Gemara Ksubas, it's the woman's decision whether she gets mezonos or keeps her Maaseh Yadayim. Over here is the case where she is getting mezonos, so she didn't take away her Maaseh Yadayim. And since she didn't do that, they are now restricted. If they're restricted, right, then she can't make a nether about it because it's not hers to make a nether about. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri and the Tanakhama are disagreeing here by Hadafah Yedei Dechak, when she pushes herself to do a little extra, whether that is hers or belongs to the husband. The Tanakhama believes it belongs to the husband, and therefore the husband never needs to take a, Rabbi Kiva. And over here it doesn't have to take a nether, whereas Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Rabbi Akiva says no, that when it comes to this extra stuff, it belongs to the husband. If that little extra stuff belongs to the husband, she's going to have to be made for the nether in order to prevent the husband from having a problem getting a knock from her. Now, here comes the problematic statement of Shmuel. Amar Shmuel, Halacha ke Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the last opinion in our Mishnah. If that's the case, the Memra Kasavar Shmuel Adam Makdish Davar Shalom Bale Olam. What is Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri worried about? Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is worried about not that the Neder is going to take place today, but the Neder is going to take effect in the future when she gets divorced. When she gets divorced in the future, not only that she's produced all that production or that divorce in the future, that hasn't taken place yet. That's something that's not in existence yet. How could it be that the nether is chal later on when she takes a nether today and it'll only be chal on something that is not in effect today? Whether it's the fact that her produce isn't in effect today because she hasn't produced anything yet, or because she isn't divorced yet. If she isn't divorced yet, why should the nether have any relevance today? It's based on the fact of Shmuel Paskins like Rabbi Yochanan Nuri and says that we do worry about it, must mean that Shmuel believes that a person can be makdish or aser with a nether, something in the future, something that does not exist today. He can be makdish or can aser. So Mar says, okay, that would be fine, except for the fact, Rimini, we have a Mishnah in Ksubas that says, a makdish masei yadei ishto, person who's makdish the output of his wife, harizeh oseh ve'ochelet. She can basically tell him, too bad, I'm not going to give you my masei yadayim, and I'm also not going to take mezonos for you. So that's one possibility, according to Rav Huna, where it's the woman's decision. She can basically say, I'm taking my masei yadayim, and don't feed me, and therefore his hektesh never takes effect, because he doesn't have rights over her output. That's her decision, what she does with her output. Or the other possibility, or the one says it's the husband's decision, is in a case where the husband is not giving her mezonos. Since he's not giving her mezonos, the Maaseh Yadayim belongs to her, and if he takes such a neder, then she goes to Vachalot, she makes for herself and eats, because he can't be makdish something that doesn't belong to her. Vehamotar, that which is left over, Rabbi Meir Omer Hektesh, Rabbi Yochanan Sanda Omer Chulin. Rabbi Meir says that that is Hektesh, Rabbi Yochanan Sanda says that's Chulin. So again, this is in a case, the Gemara Ksubas discussed that the Moser, that which is in excess of her Maaseh Yadayim is trading for mezonos, is traded for a ma. He gives her an allowance once a week, and that allowance is traded for that which is left over. So either you have to say, our case here is a case where he's not giving the allowance, and therefore the motar belongs to her, or you have to say it's in a case even when he is giving the motar, it belongs to her. But in both these cases, we're worried about the motar after she dies. That's what Rav and Shmuel and the Gemara there suggest, that the case, or that the machlokas or mishnah, the case is after she dies. After she dies, the motar that's left over, can the husband get benefit from it? right? Because he was Makdishit. So now if he was Makdishit, is that Hekdesh take effect after death when he's Yoresh that Mota? Or do we say that he doesn't have any impact on it? So Rav Meir says, it's Hekdesh, he can affect something in the future. Why? Because Rav Meir believes you can be Makdish Dovah Shalom Balei Olam. You can be Makdish something that's not in existence today. So here the husband is Makdish the Motar, that which is extra or left over. When she dies, it comes into his possession. When it comes into his possession, it's going to be Kodesh, because he was Makdish it from today. So he's able to be Makdish something in the future that's Dovah Shalom Balei Olam. Whereas Rav Yochanan ben Hassanler says, no. If it's in the future, since he can't be Makdish it today, he doesn't have possession of it today, he can't be Makdish it in the future. And if that's the case, then it's going to be chulin. His being making it hekdesh has no impact, or his taking a neder to ask her and hana from it, or her taking a neder to ask her and hana from it, it's not going to have impact because it's davar shalom bali olam. But again, Amar Shmuel, halacha Rabbi Yochanan Sandler. Over here, Shmuel's passing like Rabbi Yochanan Sandler. Ama in adam makdish davar shalom olam. We know the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan Sandler is premised on the fact that a person cannot be makdish something that is not in the world, not in existence today. Now we have a stira on the Pesukei Halacha of Shmuel. By our mission over here, Shmuel Paskins, like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who says that we worry about a neder being chal in the future after Gerushin. That's Davar Shalom Balei Olam, and yet we still worry about it and we tell the Baal to be made for it today. Yet in the Gemara Ksuba, Shmuel says Halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan Sandler says we don't worry about hekdesh in the future. Because if he can't be makdish today, it's not his possession today, then we don't worry that in the future it might come into his possession and that would be hekdesh, because that's Davar Shalom Balei Olam. Davar Shalom Balei Olam does not have relevance when it comes to hekdesh. You can't be makdish, you can't oser it. So now, that's a stira in Shmuel's position. B'chitei mar kamar halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Oh, what do you want to suggest? Over here in our Gemara, when Shmuel says halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, al hadafa hu d'kamar. He's just saying, he's arguing on Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, we're worried about the motar, or the hadafa, that which he exceeds her, the amount for her mizonos. That's what we're worried about. So when he says halacha Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, he's coming to exclude Rabbi Akiva and say, no. Find that halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, that he has to be made for. He doesn't have to be made for at all. He's just saying halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, as opposed to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says, you worry about the Hadafa or the Motar. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, no. And that's what Shmuel says, Allah is like that. If that's the case, then he said much better things to say. First of all, if that's what you want to demand, Shmuel, he should say, the Allah is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri in Hadafa. Because otherwise, Chasar Yikar Min HaSefer. If you just say Allah is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the main point that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says is that after you divorce, we worry about a neder being chal, and that's why you have to be made for the neder. If he wanted to say halacha just like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri about this other that he argues on Rabbi Akiva, say that explicitly, because otherwise we're going to think that he's talking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri himself. Inami, the other possibility. Here we're going to read the Gemara and the Girsa based on the Rach and the Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi has a different Girsa in the Gemara in Ksubot. The Ran says over here also quotes the Girsa, makes the Girsa, or quotes the Girsa like the Rach and the Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi and Ksubos himself, Rabbeinu Tam there mentions, the Rabbeinu Tam says that Rashi's Girsa doesn't make sense, because Rashi asks the question himself with his Girsa. And therefore we're going to go according to that Girsa. The Rashi over here also seems to have a similar Girsa, I think, to the way he has it in the Gemara and Ksubos. Inami, he could have said, halacha ketanakama. The halacha likes the Tanakama. The Tanakama also argues on Rabbi Kiva. He says you don't have to be made fair at all. And he believes that Mozart is not a problem. So why not just say halacha ketanakama? Forget about halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Just say that halacha is like the Tanakama. Inami, he could have said, ain halacha k'Rabbi Akiva. Much easier to say, the halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva. That means what? Not only do you not need, we don't worry about Mozart, and you don't need to be made fair. That's what he's trying to communicate. Then why talk about Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri at all? So that can't be a good solution here to Shmuel's problem. Ela Amar of Yosef. Rav Yosef comes up to a solution. Shiny konamot. Hobadam. So konamot are different. In the Gemara in Ksubos is talking about hekdesh, where you're makdish a davar. Over here, our Gemara is talking about konamot is nidarim. And nidarim and hekdesh are different. Why is that? Because hekdesh, when you want to be makdish something, there's a requirement that, number one, in order to be makdish something, you need to own it, and you need to have balas over it, that you have to have control over that object now. So for a person to be makdish something, he first of all has to have ownership. He must own the item. And number two is it has to be within his possession to control the item at this time. He needs both of those in order to be makdish it. Therefore, we're going to say that he can't be makdish davar shalom balei olam, something that's non-existent, he can't be makdish, because that's both. He doesn't own it yet, and it's not in his possession or his control to deal with it right now. And because of that, he can't be makdish it. That's not necessarily true of konamot. When it comes to nidarim, you don't have to own the item that you're restricting. Right. First of all, a person can be restrict other another person's payroll to possessions on himself. He can say, this third party's possessions are now restricted on me. And he can do that, even though he doesn't own the possessions. Or the other way around, he can ask his own possessions on another party. And he can take his own possessions and say they're restricted to someone else. So you see, we don't require either full ownership or full control by Nidarim. So maybe the din by Nidarim is going to be different with regards to Dover Shalom Bali Olam. That's what the Gemara of Rav Yosef suggests here. So let's do this. Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef, Shani Konamo. Hova Adam Oser Perot Chaveru Alav. Since a person can eat Oser, the parents of his friend on him, Oser Nami Dover Shalom Bali Olam. So he can also restrict something that hasn't come into existence. Allah Olam Alav. So Amalei Abayabai says, wait a minute, that's not so clear, because by Nidarim there's also different cases. What's that? Bishlama Adam Oser Perot Chaveru Alav. Person can restrict his friend's fruits on him. Because a person can also restrict his perot on his friend. Meaning that you need, what Rabbi's pointing out is that you need at least one side of the nether to be within your purview or within your possession. Meaning that either it has to be you, the person who is restricted is you, even though it's your friend's fruits, or the other way around. It has to be your fruits, even though it's your friend that's restricted. But in either of these cases, at least one of the chafatim, either the gavro or the chafet, the chayfets are in your possession. But you can't restrict your friend's fruits on another friend. I mean, that there you have no right to argue. And that should be the equivalent of davar shelo bali olam. Davar shelo bali olam is something that you don't own and you don't have control over. I mean, that you don't have the gavra and you don't have the chayfets. So too over here. So even if you say kodamot are different than hektes, yes, they'll be different in this aspect, that when if you have one side of ownership or one side of control, that's enough to make the nether. That'll be different than hektesh. But you can't take it to the extreme and say that even davar shelo bali olam nether will be different than hektesh, because even by a nether we see that you can't oser a third party's possessions on another party. Ella, so what's the answer to this? Ella Rav Huna, Breder Rav Shua, we're not talking, our Mishnah here is not talking about a case of davar shelo bali olam, because she said, she restricts her hands. Her hands are davar shelo bali olam. That my hands are now restricted from anybody getting hanah from them, my hands. Meaning her hands, yadayim hayinu b'olam. Her hands are now in existence in the world, and therefore what she means is the output of her hands. But since she put the nether, she made the nether on her hands, we had this earlier in the Masechta, that if you, nether has to be on a davar mamashir, it has to be on something that a chesed that exists. So too, it can't be on a intangible item. So the Gemara answered up early on when we dealt with these cases where we seem to have nidarim with intangible items, that the Gemara says that they answer the object that creates the intangible item. Not that they answered your output, they answered your hands that make the output. Not that you answered the dibor speaking, you answered your mouth that does the speaking from doing speaking. So there you put a tangible item in there that allows you have the nether. So it's over here. We're going to say our mission is talking about a case where it is a davar shebali olam. It's a davar shebali olam because her hands are in existence. That's what she makes us. So the chavis just makes us her hands and the production of her hands. Now where it says, does that really work? We still have the same problem that her hands are still, the husband has a lien on her output, on her hands, on anything that she produces. So her nether still does not have effect until she is divorced. Until she's divorced, this nether will not take effect. So why aren't we back to step one again? You're still on davar shelo bali olam. She's trying to make a nether on her hands. Yes, her hands are in existence today, but her ability to control her hands or to have possession over her hands, that doesn't exist today. She doesn't have that until she gets divorced. So Gemara says, all right, we can solve that problem. She doesn't make the nether today. She makes the nether today, the dibra nether today, but the chalus nether, the effectiveness of the nether will only be when she gets divorced. So when the nether comes into effect, it's at a time where she does have control. It's not a davar shelo bali olam. Number one, she's talking about her yodayim. And number two, so that's it's not produce in the future, what she's going to produce, but it's actually her hands. She doesn't own her hands today. She's taking a nether today that says, when I get divorced, my hands will be usher banoah to you. That you, whatever I produce will be usher banoah from you through the chayfets of my hands, through the tangible objects of my hands. So that should work now, because it's number one, it's not a davar shelo bali olam, because the nether is only chal l'chi megarshim when he divorces in the future, and it's yodayim. The Ran says, well, that works only well according to the person who says it's davar shelo bali olam, because you're having a chalus nether on something that happens in the future. You're saying a nether today that only has chalus on something that takes place in the future, the chima garsha. Megarshin is not something that's guaranteed. That's davar shelo bali olam. You're right, the chima garsha is in the future, so that deals with the one who holds davar shelo bali olam. We've solved this problem, why she can make such a nether. But according to the one who says davar shelo bali olam is not, she can't make a nether. But we're still back to step one, because her gerushin, her divorce, is also a davar shelo bali olam. It hasn't happened yet. So even though she says the chalos will never be when she gets divorced, that divorce hasn't taken place yet. And since that divorce hasn't taken place, it's equivalent to davar shelo bali olam. Hashta miya lo migarsha. At this point, she hasn't been divorced. And how do you know if she says such a statement, l'chi megarsha, that it should work? Now the Gemara is going to continue tomorrow. We'll do this tomorrow, but the Gemara is going to bring a number of examples from fields, being makdish of fields. Try to compare our case here by the woman being osur her output to cases in hektesh by fields. It's, again, it's the exact same Gemara that we had in Kesubos, and I'll go through a number of examples tomorrow to see whether this even works. Even according to one that says Davar Shel Bali Olam, does she have enough control to ask her in the future or something when it's not in her possession today? Does that really work? And that's what the Gemara is going to deal with tomorrow. We'll stop here.